The Joe Mason Show is on in 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We are going to talk NBA basketball today. Later on, my friend Rush Olson will be here to talk about NBA expansion within the United States, followed by J.A. Sherman, another good friend of mine. We're going to talk about Kevin Durant, who is completely on fire. But up first, Kawhi Leonard's out. Half their team is out. And the San Antonio Spurs are still a half game out of first place in the Western Conference. And here to talk all about that, from PoundingTheRock.com, please welcome my good friend, J.R. Wilco is in the house. J.R., how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Phil.
It's my pleasure. I want to send out a special shout-out to the folks at Epics Radio in Portugal. They are our brand-new affiliate. We're really happy to have them a part of our family, and we're happy to be a part of theirs. They'll be airing the show for now on Saturdays, and then after they get everything together, hopefully we'll be there every single day talking great NBA hoops, having great opinions, and a whole bunch of other things. But JR,
yeah,
Kawhi Leonard, my guy, out 3 to 4 weeks with a broken hand. What in the world is going on with the Spurs?
Well, Danny Green broke his hand. Thiago Splitter separated his shoulder. Manu Ginobili had a tweak hamstring. He's back. And then now Kawhi Leonard is, he broke his hand yesterday against the Thunder. And he was in the middle of making Kevin Durant pretty uncomfortable at the time. But, I mean, there's only so much you can do with a guy like Durant, except try and, you know, deny him the ball somewhat and get him out of off his spots and out of rhythm. But the guys, I mean, like almost the entire gym is Kevin Durant's spot. So that's easier said than done. But I mean, these guys are experiencing the kinds of injuries that happen once every 5, 6, 7 years. Manu Ginobili broke his hand. It wasn't the same kind of play. He broke his hand a couple, 3 years ago, and the first thing you think is, oh, man, now he's going to, you know, just be frail. And he hasn't had a recurrence of that injury since. He 2009-2010 season, last game of the regular season, right before the Grizzlies series, where the Grizzlies, as an 8 seed, took out the Spurs as a 1 seed. The last game of the regular season, Manu Ginobili, a freak kind of thing, which was a lot with his arm, like it was with Kawhi's hand last night. His arm just kind of got hung behind him, and you just keep on running and think that your body's going to come with you, and it doesn't. But that thing hasn't happened to Manu again since then. So these kinds of things happen. I'm glad that they're happening if they have to happen. I'm glad they're happening now instead of real close to the playoffs. I mean, you got enough time to take a little time off, rehab, get back in the rhythm, and still have a good amount of the season in order to get everything just straight. That these things are, I was like, this is the year of the injury, right? I mean, you're next. Can I still call them you're next? Do you still claim them, or have you disassociated yourself with them like you said you were going to?
I'll always claim them, but I haven't watched them since that day I said I wouldn't, and they seem to be doing better. So I leave them be.
Well, you're next. It seems like everybody on that team's been hurt for at least once and for several weeks. If not hurt in body, then at least hurt in mind, to the point where some guy's got to untie people's shoelaces or something. Anyway, I don't know about all that.
Idiot, man.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. It's crazy. But what it comes down to is, this is, if you're going to plan this kind of thing, which you can't because it happens whenever, but if you're going to plan it, you're going to plan it for right now. You kind of find out what the team's got. you get some rhythm, you get going, you take a little time off, and then you have enough time to rehab and come back in and get your rhythm back. And yes, it really, really stinks, because that's three of the guys who were starting at the beginning of the season. Tiago Splitter, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard. This is the three of the guys that are that make up one of the best defensive five-man rotations in the league. I'm sorry, make that the best defensive five-man rotation in the league last year. Three-fifths of them out with injuries right now at the same time from the same team. And it's even in all of that, 32-10 is the record. So if anybody is ready to handle a situation like this, and who can be ready? You can't plan for three of your starters to be out at the same time. But if anybody can work around it, it's Popovich. But man, it is not a whole lot of fun right now in the team room with all the injuries and everybody having to deal with different rotations and being used in different spots and all of the different units that Popovich is putting together. It's everybody's out of their comfort zone for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? And I'm going to interject an opinion here.
Okay.
Why not? I would think that of the three, the main loss, and it's really going to show, is with Kawhi Leonard, because he is just fabulous defender. He shuts down. Like you said, with Kevin Durant, it's pretty difficult to shut that dude down. But he does a number on teams, and I don't know that the Spurs have someone to, bridge that dam, so to speak, or lock that gusher.
He's the toughest to replace, without a doubt. He's the guy that wins those 50-50 balls. For any of your listeners that don't watch the Spurs regularly, just saw Kawhi go crazy in the finals, or maybe look at his box score from time to time in fantasy sports. It's impossible to measure his value by the box score, because numerous times a game, the ball will get loose, be on the ground in between several guys. And this is the kind of thing that the Spurs, when Manu was young, when Bruce Bowen was in his prime, when Duncan was in his 20s, that those were the guys that were getting those 50-50 balls, that were pulling out of the scrum and head with a head of steam headed towards the bucket. And as Duncan got a little bit older, as Bruce Bowen retired, and as Manu got a little older as well, these are the kinds of plays that the Spurs would get the ball in less and less often. And it really came to a head against the Grizzlies in that series that we talked about earlier, when every 50-50 ball, every ball, a weird bounce, it went to the Grizzlies. They had the more athletic guys. They had the younger, quicker hands. And Kawhi changed so much of that. Kawhi and Danny Green just thrived in those kinds of situations. And so now our best guy at that kind of thing is Patty Mills. Dude's 6 feet tall. He's a backup point guard. And he's scrappy as anything. He's got fabulously quick hands. He's constantly playing, passing lanes and messing up the opponent's team as they're just trying to do a simple inbound after the Spurs score. He gets a steal in that situation. Once they probably average one every single night. Sometimes he gets a couple, and that's our guy who's the best on the team at that right now. Because of the injuries, and it's a difficult thing to you can't plan around it, but it's a difficult thing to respond to, because those are the unplanned events. You can plan for what the defense throws at you. You can call a play. You can prepare, and the Spurs are probably most prepared, if not among the most prepared teams in the league. And everybody's on the same page. That's why they can move the ball around so well, because they all know where they're supposed to be and where everybody else is supposed to be. You can plan for that kind of stuff. It's unplanned stuff. That's where your just innate athleticism comes in, where those reaction times and the speed of the hands and the manual dexterity and the vision to be able to see that, you know, where the ball's bouncing and expect it to be where your hand's going. I mean, that's really where Kawhi's going to, the loss of Kawhi is going to hurt the most. And Danny Green as well is in that same kind of area. And I mean, the good thing is that Kawhi is so young, guys in their early 20s heal really fast. And so they've got a 3 to 4 week on him. So we're talking about the middle of February, maybe in the middle to the end of the rodeo road trip, which is historically where the Spurs have really excelled anyway. And so you definitely feel the hurt of it, but all of these guys should be back and getting their legs underneath them, you know, just about the time the All-Star break is over in the end of February. So that's the good news. The good news is we should have all of March and April for everyone together, coming back from those injuries and hopefully really, really gelling to enter the playoffs.
So who is going to guard the opposition's best scorer now that Kawhi's out? Because that's where you're going to really get hurt.
It's going to have to be a team effort. Anyone who watched the Thunder game yesterday at the end of the first half, like me, were probably wondering why Manu Ginobili is guarding Kevin Durant, but he did a fantastic job on him. A few possessions in a row, and really, I mean, it was as uncomfortable as I've seen Durant in a while. Just was upset and, you know, pushing off Ginobili and out of rhythm, losing the ball, traveling, all that kind of stuff. He had 7 turnovers in the first half. And I think that it would have been difficult for him to pull off the kind of second half that he did if Kawhi had been in there, obviously. But with the Spurs, it's always a team effort plus individual effort. It's never based around one guy just absolutely shutting somebody down. Even when Kawhi is guarding Durant, there's guys that Pop will send with double teams and traps and hedges and stuff to keep him out of his rhythm. So there's not going to be any one guy doing that, and everybody's going to have to chip in. Everybody's going to have to learn a few new techniques, a couple different schemes that Pop's going to throw in there to do that. But the main thing at this point is just continuing to rack up those wins. You know, the Thunder were supposed to drop out of the top of the Western Conference when Westbrook went down. But what happened? You know, Reggie Jackson and the rest of the guys stepped up. Serge Ibaka did what he didn't do in the playoffs last year and actually raised his game a little bit. And you have the entire team, everybody doing a little bit more than what they normally do in order to hang tough while Westbrook gets healthy. And so the Spurs are going to have to do the exact same thing. And I believe they can do it, and they just need to continue to. It's just that some of those games that the Spurs have had over the first half of the season, where they've just run roughshod over these middle to lower tier teams, some of those games might be closer than what they have been. They might, you know, drop a couple that they've been winning, but the main thing is not to feel like they have to win every single game or put a whole lot of pressure on themselves to win the games against the elite in the West or the two elite teams in the East, because they don't have their full team.
Sounds good. And they have a very big test this week: Friday night Atlanta, Sunday Miami, Tuesday Houston. Should be a very interesting time without Kawhi Leonard. Let's see maybe if the Spurs can beat a good team, and I want to see that happen. Anyway, great stuff today, JR. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You bet. Always enjoy it. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. That was J.R. Wilco. You can find him at poundingtherock.com. Coming up next, Rush Olson and I will be talking about expansion in the NBA. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
This is The Phil Nason Show.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
And we'll be right back after these brief announcements.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody get
up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out. My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
Oh, you again.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, and I want to extend a very warm hello to Epix Radio in Portugal. They are now carrying the Phil Nason Show on Saturdays, and they'll also be doing that, hopefully, during the week once they get everything up and running. But we want to welcome you all. We're going to talk, as I said, this is an NBA show today. And joining me is my friend, man. Rush Olson is in the house. Rush, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm great, Phil. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. You were here 2 weeks ago, I believe, and we were talking about NBA expansion. And people were really enjoying the conversation a lot, but what they really wanted to know, Rush, is about expansion in the United States. While people, we would like to see the NBA go global, and I believe it already has, the NBA, could it expand in the U.S.?
Well, I did, after we decided to do this topic, I did a little research and tried to get my thoughts in order on it. And the answer, the short answer is, I think it could. The question, however, to me is, should it?
Well, that's a good question. Should it? And, well, I you know, this is where I'm thinking today. Seattle. Now, we do an Oklahoma City Thunder report. He'll be right after us. Mm-hmm. They were the Seattle Supersonics. And, you know, the Seattle people, and I'm good friends with the guys who run SonicsRising.com. Mm-hmm. They desperately want a team in Seattle. They were able to, well, they thought they were supporting it pretty well, What about Seattle? What about, because that's a community that supported the Supersonics big time.
Well, and I think Seattle, if I were going to put a franchise anywhere, it would be Seattle. And Seattle has a few things in its favor. One is it's got the history, of course. They've got a championship on their record. They've got a group that nearly stole the Sacramento Kings. So they've got the potential for strong ownership. The other thing they've got is they're the number 13 TV market in the country. And that counts for a lot. One of the negatives for Seattle is they've already got a strong pro sports presence where those sponsorship dollars, ticket sales dollars and stuff go. You've got your Mariners, your Seahawks, the Sounders are huge in Seattle. But the nice thing is none of those are a winter sport per se. So in terms of the TV market, it's especially attractive not only because of its size, but also because the only hockey team there is a Canadian Junior League team. And so the Seattle Supersonics, or whatever they ended up being called, kind of has that winter primetime sports TV market to themselves.
So it's pretty ripe then.
I would think so. The question is, if you expand... Or a question is, there's plenty of questions. A, if you expand, can you only expand by a factor of one? Does it make sense to do that? If Seattle, let's say, is the only really truly attractive market, might make more sense to move a team. Let's say Charlotte continues to do poorly even through their rebranding, or the Pelicans don't pick up. Might it make sense to instead move a team to Seattle as they almost did with Sacramento? Could be that's the better option.
Yeah, it could be, because you don't want to have 31 teams. You don't want to have an odd team. But what about some other cities? Like, for example, I lived in Las Vegas, as you know, for many, many years. And there was always talk about Las Vegas being a NBA town. Now, I used to go to the UNLV games, and that was a full house every ball game. But do you think, and we could talk about this in a minute, because I'm very familiar with Vegas. Do you think Vegas could actually sustain a professional sports franchise?
You'll be able to speak better than I will to the nature of the basketball fans there, the community. The stuff that I look at, there's a couple things I look at with Vegas. One is the TV market is number 42, and that's pretty good in terms of where the NBA hasn't gone yet, in terms of where they don't have franchises. That's pretty high in the rankings, the TV market. The other thing I think is so interesting about Vegas is the gambling side of it. And the American sports leagues have traditionally tried to really distance themselves from gambling. The rest of the world's sports have not done that as much. They take plenty of gambling advertising and things like that. The U.S. legal structure when it comes to gambling is very different as well from a lot of the rest of the world in terms of how you can bet and where you can bet. And there's these sort of laws that favor Atlantic City and Las Vegas. So I think the gambling thing could play a role as well. Let's say the U.S. laws stay roughly as they are, but the NBA decides, you know what, it's about time we started getting some of that gambling advertising money. Maybe that would be a time when they would say to Las Vegas, this is where we need to be.
Yeah, it's kind of tough. I remember when the Maloofs purchased the Sacramento Kings, and they weren't allowed to take bets on Kings games in Vegas because of that. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be an issue. Now, they can't gamble on UNLV games, or they couldn't when I lived there. And I don't think they can now. But as far as the community for basketball, Vegas is a very transient community. They say 200,000 people move there every month, or a few years ago they did. but what they didn't say is 250,000 moved away. It's a very transient community. The basketball community are basically old timers, guys who've been there a long time. New people who just love basketball and just think it's cool to go to a UNLV game. But I don't think that Las Vegas can sustain a professional franchise because you're fighting for a lot of entertainment dollar there. You've got all these shows. You've got all kinds of things to do. And I don't think the casinos are going to want it either, because they want to take that action on those NBA games, because that's big money for them, and they would be losing for sure. But it would be an interesting idea to try to bring it there. I just don't see how it would work.
I tend to agree with you. It's one of the stronger candidates, but it's got certain special characteristics that might hurt it, such as the transient nature of some of the population, as you noted, and then the gambling issue is very complicated.
Oh yeah, very complicated. So Vegas will put that on the back burner, Rush. What yes. about Pittsburgh? Because Pittsburgh is a great sports town. It's blue collar, working class. These guys are great fans. What about Pittsburgh and basketball, though? I don't know if they're a big basketball town.
To me, the biggest thing that Pittsburgh has going for it is the fact that it is such a great sports town. You look at how they get, you know, really worked up over their teams, especially when those teams are doing well. And you go, wow, yeah, Pittsburgh is good. It's the 23rd biggest TV market, so it's a pretty good size one, bigger than some of the other markets in the league, so it might be a good acquisition there. I think the biggest issue to me would be whether it's got the sponsorship dollars and season ticket sales dollars to sustain a new team, because one of the things all three of those teams in Pittsburgh have is history. You've got the Steelers, you've got the Pirates, you know, one of the oldest baseball teams around, you know, even the Penguins, who are a relatively more recent arrival, still have the legacy of a Mario Lemieux and a Jaromir Jagr and Sidney Crosby. Those other three teams are going to be hard to sell against. You know, when I was looking at cities, all I could think about when we brought up Pittsburgh was the fish that saved Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I got you.
Remember that movie with Dr. J?
Absolutely. I do remember it. But you know what, though, those fans, man, in Pittsburgh, with those hankies they were waving this season, you know, it was the first time the Pirates had been in the playoffs in so long. And it was nice to see the Steelers, big football town, big hockey town, like you said. You know, Mario Lemieux sparked some interest there. And Sid the Kid is still keeping it going. But basketball, I don't know, man. It'd be tough, but you're right. They do have some great things going for them. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and ironically, they might even have too many great things going for them, in that the businesses might be reluctant to transfer a sponsorship or a suite from one of those other teams to a new basketball team.
And that's the other thing too. You know, you got to be able to fill those arenas, and those suites are the main thing. Because mm-hmm. that's cash in hand every night, and that's important too, very important. Now, what about Louisville, Kentucky? That is a monster basketball community.
That's an interesting case. I read up on them a little bit. One of the things that I was looking at in terms of markets and markets where you might expand and be successful is the model of Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and Portland, where they are the only pro sports game in town. And you would have that in Louisville. It's not the biggest market. It's the 49th biggest TV market. And so I read up a little bit on this, because Louisville has been one of the rumors. One of the issues is, what do you do with the University of Louisville? The University of Louisville draws 20,000 people a game. They play in an arena that could probably be adapted to the NBA. The question is, could you continue to draw that with an NBA team, or is the University of Louisville brand too powerful where they would continue to overshadow an NBA team? The other part of it is, what happens with the debate within the community? Because a lot of folks, in the debate of whether they should get an NBA team or not, or will this take away too much from U of L? So it wouldn't necessarily even be a slam dunk to go in there if the NBA decided that was a viable market.
And that's exactly right. You know, but they are a big college basketball town, big basketball state, but I don't know if Louisville could sustain a pro franchise and the University of Louisville. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think they could do it. So, well, I don't know. I guess to sum it all up, Seattle is our best bet.
That's what I think. A couple of the other markets I took a look at were Mexico City, which may have soured their chances by failing to accomplish actually playing a game there this year.
Yeah, right.
Another one I looked at was Hartford. It's the biggest TV market, one of the biggest TV markets available that doesn't have other sports teams. But they're the 30th biggest TV market in the country. But I looked up the Whalers when they had an NHL team. The best season for the Whalers, they didn't even average 15,000 fans. And that's probably not going to be good enough on a consistent basis. And then the other one I thought was the most promising, if you needed one to pair with Seattle, is one that's been rumored in a couple of different sports from time to time, which is the Virginia Beach Norfolk, the Northern Virginia market. It's the 45th biggest TV market, and it's not really – it's far enough away from other markets. Washington's about 200 miles from. It's about 300 miles from Charlotte. It's far enough away that you wouldn't be cannibalizing fans, but close enough to those to maybe build up a rivalry. So – that was this, and of course that's real good basketball country there. They're in Northern Virginia, so that was the other one that I thought might potentially be attractive enough to work.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I was thinking about Portland, Maine, the Sea Dogs. Remember the Sea Dogs? I've actually been to a Sea Dog game, and I had a great time. They have great hot dogs there, by the way. But Portland, Maine, would be another place. There's not a whole lot to do in the winter there. They don't have any other pro sports. Mm-hmm. It might be a good place too, but we have to find someone to be with Seattle, or we have to find someone to move to Seattle. And man, because yes. I just don't like to see that fan base without a team, because I interact with these guys and they miss their team.
I agree. There have been so many great players that you identify with the Sonics. A lot of, obviously they went to a couple of finals. They had some other real good teams. I agree. Seattle to me is an important part of the league's history.
Yeah. That 1980 team was a fantastic basketball team. One of the best I've ever seen, but we've got about a minute left, because that's how easy this topic just flows. You said Mexico City, mm-hmm. and you're probably right. What other places, maybe in Canada? Okay, didn't fly too good in Vancouver, but is there anywhere else in maybe Canada that another team could pop up and succeed?
Another one that's been mentioned is Montreal, and Montreal is a tricky market. It's a big market. It would provide natural rivalry with Toronto because they're natural rivals in all sports. What would be tricky about Montreal, first of all, it doesn't help your domestic TV rights fees because it's outside the United States. The French-speaking nature of it, I think, could be a problem for free agents. I think it might be difficult to attract free agents to Montreal. It's already hard to get them to go to Toronto. I think it might be even tougher to get them to go to Quebec, where they have a lot of restrictions even on language issues.
All right. You know what? Great stuff today, Rush. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome, sir.
That was Rush Olson. You can find him over at rusholson.com. Coming up next, J.A. Sherman and I will be talking about Kevin Durant just blowing up the Nets. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
This is The Phil Nason Show.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
And we'll be right back after these brief announcements.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of Mets Musings, and I hope you'll join me each and every week as I recap all of the comings and goings-on in New York Mets baseball. I'll have guests on from all across Mets Nation giving their insights and analysis on the New York Mets. And you can follow me on Twitter at MetsMusings1, as well as on Facebook. Group name is Mets Musings. So tune in weekly to the Mets Musings, available at MetsMusings.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes.com, iHeartRadio, and of course, BaseballTalkRadio.com, the home of great baseball talk shows.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
no.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out. My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now back to the Phil Nason Show.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, as always, this stuff in lieu of actual entertainment.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Kevin Durant is doing things I haven't seen in a very long time. His stat line for the last five games, he's averaging 40 points a game. He's averaging 1.4 steals a game, 6.2 assists, and 5 rebounds a game. He's shooting 56% from three, 59% from the field, and 86% from the line. And here to talk about all that and more, please welcome from WelcomeToLoudCity.com, my friend Andy, I'm sorry, J.A. Sherman is in the house. How you doing, J.A.? What's up, man?
I'm doing all right, Phil. You feeling all right?
Yeah, I still got the flu, man. I don't usually mess up that name, but Marone, I can't
That's
believe
all
right. it. It's all good, though. Anyway, we want to send out a big shout-out to Epics Radio in Portugal. They are now airing this show as of Saturday, and we are really thrilled to have them here. It's going to be a lot of fun. Kevin Durant, man, what in the world?
Yeah, so he's had a pretty good week.
yeah, I guess.
It's really hard to put this into context because I really can't remember any point, really, maybe even since Michael Jordan, that I've seen this kind of offensive production coupled with the efficiency that we've seen. As you mentioned, Durant is not only averaging over 40 points a game over his last five wins, but he's doing it on nearly 60% shooting from the floor. He's averaging, you know, probably like 24 shots a game, 22 shots a game, making 13 of those. The only time I can remember in the last 10 years or so where we've seen this kind of point production is Kobe Bryant. Looking back to like the 2003 season or maybe the 2007 season when he would go on those scoring binges. But if you look at the numbers, he was putting up 30 shots a game, sometimes 40 shots a game to get those numbers. And so it's really not comparable. Durant, his efficiency just takes him through the roof and head and shoulders over everybody else.
Head and shoulders over everyone else is exactly correct. And more importantly, look who he's doing it against. San Antonio, yeah. Portland, Golden State, Houston, four playoff teams, and he is just—I just don't even know what to say.
Yeah, and I don't think enough can be said about the fact that four of those wins came against future playoff teams. You've got Houston, Golden State, Portland, and San Antonio. San Antonio and Portland had two of the best records in the West, and Houston, Golden State were back-to-back. Portland, San Antonio were back-to-back. So you're talking about four huge wins in a couple of times hostile situations, hostile environments. And the Thunder, and I'm not going to say they made it look easy, but they looked really good against all four of those teams. And let us not forget, that is without Russell Westbrook. That means they're not getting 22 points a game from their point guard, seven rebounds, six assists, and the tenaciousness and the competitiveness from Russell Westbrook. He's on the sideline wearing a suit cheering on his team. The offensive hub is Durant, and everybody else just kind of revolves around him. And yet, you look at the team's overall offensive production. That's been outstanding as well. In those five games, the lowest score was 104 points against Houston. The high point was against Golden State with 127, and that's not an overtime game. So it's not just Durant, but the entire team is operating at a very high offensive level.
Hey, they're off the charts. And you made a good point, you know, no third row. But here's the thing, though. If Russell Westbrook was there, mm-hmm. Durant wouldn't be busting loose like this, would he?
Well, he is averaging, like I said, 22 shots a game, you know, and that's a little bit higher than what his season average is. Let's see, that's a bump of about between four and five extra shots per game. Okay, so we are looking at a higher usage for Durant, but it's not so astronomically high that he's dominating the ball. He's still operating as sort of the point forward a lot of the time, but for the most part, he's leaving those responsibilities to point guard Reggie Jackson, the guy who's replaced Westbrook. And he's just running some great offensive curls, some good post-up position, and he's barely even holding onto the ball. He's catching, he's shooting, he's making cuts, he's attacking. And so he's not occupying the ball the way we've seen a lot of high-volume scorers do. And because of that, it's made defenses have to work incredibly hard to stay with him. And it's really opened up the rest of the offense as well. Guys like Jackson have played really well. Jeremy Lamb is starting to pick up his offense again. Serge Ibaka has had three consecutive 20-point games in a row a couple games ago. So the whole team has really been operating in a very fluid way that we had not seen previously. And it was as stunning as it is bringing a lot of joy to the hearts of Thunder fans.
I guess so. You know, this is something. Did you see the other day where LeBron James said he was jealous of Kevin Durant?
Yeah, but I did like Durant's response. LeBron was saying, you know, I'm not allowed to shoot that much over here. Yeah, he only is taking about 15, 16 shots a game. And Durant said, I'm 100% sure that LeBron can do whatever he wants in that offense. And he's right. But I think, and LeBron has taken, he's had more 30 shot games in his career than Durant has by far. But I think what LeBron is kind of wistful about is the fact that when you are the primary scoring threat, you can take a lower percentage shot with impunity and not feel the scrutiny that comes with it. And so that's something that Durant has, although he always has that. I mean, he's not a bad shot taker. But I think LeBron is, I mean, it is kind of cool in a way because he's envious of what Durant can do. Durant can do things that LeBron cannot do. And I think it's really good for the league overall that their two best players do have a mutual respect and admiration for what the other guy can do.
Yeah, you got that right. I'll tell you what, he can do whatever he wants over there in Miami. He doesn't need to, though. He involves his teammates, but so does Kevin Durant. And this is the part that people miss, is this kid is just lights out. He's passing the ball. He's actually very unselfish.
Yeah, and if you look at his high point game against the Warriors, where he scored a career high 54 points, just an insane level of efficiency. In that game, he shot 19 for 28, 68% from the floor for those 54 points. Just an incredible level of efficiency. But he also had 6 assists in that game, which means that not only was he looking for good shots, but he was also looking for his teammates. And there were at least 3 sequences down the stretch where he was willfully giving up the ball to Serge Ibaka, to his teammates, because they had great shot opportunities. And because he was willing to give the ball up without hesitation, it means that the defense can't concentrate on him. They have to give him a measure of respect defensively and give him some space to work, which in turn, therefore, gives him a greater cushion to shoot the ball.
Absolutely, and he's just crushing it, man. I'll tell you what. My fantasy team is very happy with you, Kevin Durant. God bless you. Anyhow, that's right. We did get some questions from the listening audience.
Yes.
And I know you enjoy those the most. Cause
yes.
It's good because the show lingers this way. You know, it just doesn't die on Friday. But this listener asked the following. Thabo Sefolosha is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. What happens if the Thunder aren't able to re-sign him?
Okay, so he is correct. Sefolosha is going to be an unrestricted free agent, which means that he does have the choice to hit the free agent market and see what kind of bids other teams might be willing to offer him for his services. He's 29 years old, I believe, which means that he's got one last big contract in his career. That's not to say that he's got to retire after that contract, but he is less likely to get a big contract, 2 contracts out than this next one. And so he is going to be probably, I would imagine he's going to be looking around to see what his market value is. And with the Thunder, he's been at a very good price. I think it's like $3.5 million. I forgot to look it up. I apologize for that. But a very cost-effective salary cap number for the Thunder. And you would think that because he's what we call a 3-and-D guy, he shoots three-point shots efficiently for the most part, and he's a very good defensive wing player, that there's always a market for guys like that. Tony Allen makes $5 million a year. Quincy Pondexter makes like $4 million a year. So you could see Sefolosha getting somewhere in that ballpark. And so – the expectation going into this year was that he was going to be really gunning for that contract. That said, he has really struggled this year, and I don't fully understand why. I don't know if it's a combination of not having Westbrook around to set him up for open looks. I don't know if it's the pressure of a contract season where he feels like he has to outperform his current contract in order to get a pay bump. I don't know, but there have been games where he's been really, really hesitant to shoot the ball, even though it looks like his shot mechanics have improved over the years. He's looked kind of lost, hasn't shot the ball with confidence. And so I don't know whether he's really played himself into a position where a lot of suitors are going to be found if he does decide to hit the free agent market. So if that's the case, I could very well see the Thunder retaining his services for a marginal pay bump, and I don't think that would be a bad move at all. I think for the right number, he should be kept around. I think he has a good role on the team. I think hopefully after he gets the contract situation settled, he'll get some of his mojo back. But for the time being, it's really difficult to say whether he's played himself into a position where another team is going to try and take him away.
That's a good answer. He's making $3.9 million this season.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. That's why we're here. But, you know something? It would be really strange to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder without Sefolosha in the lineup. He's not my favorite fantasy guy, but He does a lot of things that are very useful for any basketball team, but I think he's a big part of the why that defense is so good, right?
Yeah, he's a very smart defensive player. He is usually the guy that gets tasked with guarding some of the elite point guards in the league. He'll be the guy that guards Tony Parker. He'll be the guy that guards Damian Lillard. And he has a really good way about using his body, his length, and defensive positioning to take away a lot of the things that they like to do and really makes it hard for them to operate. So he definitely has a role on the team. It's not always a fourth quarter role because he has been so hesitant offensively. But I like the guy. I would like to see him shoot with a little bit more confidence.
And maybe a lot of that has to do with his contract too. You never know.
Absolutely. I think it could be.
It's not like baseball players who just all of a sudden become gargantuans during a contract year. Basketball is a little different. Now, another question that came in, and I didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
But the listener asked, why should Reggie Jackson stick around? Well, because they picked up his contract for next season, right?
Yeah, and I think if I'm understanding the question correctly, it's not necessarily a question about this year or next year, but when he does reach the end of his rookie contract, is it going to be worth his while to stay in Oklahoma City, or would he start pushing for a trade? And it's impossible to look at Jackson's situation without looking at it through the lens of the James Harden situation. Jackson is not at that level, at least not yet. He's a third-year guy. James Harden really made his hay in his fourth year. So I don't know if he's ever going to get quite to that level because Harden is now an all-star. But Harden wanted a max contract. He wanted to be the number one guy. He wanted all the things that come with being a franchise player. And I don't think Jackson is going to get quite to that level, but if he does start looking at a contract that is a little bit supersized, I could easily see him pursuing it. He has said that he wants to be a starter in the NBA. It's hard to say whether that would ever happen in Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook around. And so from his own personal standpoint, I could easily see him asking the Thunder to consider moving him. I don't know how Presti would be receptive to that, but that's something that the Thunder fan base worries about all the time. Every time they see him put up a game like he just did against the Spurs, 27 points on 12 for 17 shooting, 8 assists, 0 turnovers, we get a little nervous because we think about James Harden and we think, oh my gosh, how long do we have Jackson before he bolts too? So it's a question that we're always asking ourselves. But for the time being, he's a Thunder guy. He's going to be a Thunder guy next year. So let's just enjoy it and hope that he continues his rapid ascension.
Sounds good to me. Great stuff today, J.A. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, that was J.A. Sherman. You can find him over at welcometoloudcity.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all my guests for being here. On Monday, we'll be talking hoops again. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.